Hi, this is Iris Jackson, and this is Miracles Happen, Dreams Do Come True. And I have a miracle in my life to share with you. The beloved, wonderful, precious, dear Peter Mount Shasta. Welcome, Peter.
Why, thank you, Iris. It's nice to be here talking with you.
Thank you. I first became aware of your book, I Am the Open Door, about 12 years ago, and got my first copy. And books like that tend to, no matter how many copies I get, either somebody borrows them or I give them away, but they're usually not in my library.
Right.
And that is so with your book. And it is so beautiful. Every part of it is so beautifully, perfectly done. It's something that feels good to hold in your hand.
Thank you. Would you like to start off hearing about a miracle
relating
to the book?
Yes.
I just had an email from a lady by the name of Tahira who lived in Mount Shasta on and off, and now she's with her wonderful husband in Scandinavia, I believe. But she told me this story a few years ago. I didn't even know this had happened, that she saw my book advertised, I think, in Halo magazine, which was a magazine published by Robert Rose in Chicago many years ago. And she sent off for it thinking, well, I've heard about St. Germain. I wonder if this stuff is true about the Masters and the I Am. And the book arrived, and she didn't really have much chance to read it. She just read a few paragraphs, and she had to go to the bank and do some errands, and she sent out a sort of a mental message to St. Germain and said, if this book is true and if you're real, please show me. And then she put the book on the table, and she didn't live with anybody else. Then she went out to the bank and did a few errands, and she came back and the book was gone. And she thought, well, that's strange, you know, where could it have gone? Well, sometime later, she had moved to Mount Shasta, and she never was able to find that book again. And then all of a sudden, the book one day just dropped right out of the air. She saw it appear in the air and saw it. It just fell right out of the air onto the table. And so that was sort of an answer to her question, you know,
read this book.
Right, absolutely. And it's sort of an introduction to the I Am teachings, which, it, you know, it seems like it's something that's so simple, but people make it so complicated, you know.
Well, you wanted to talk today about the prerequisites for ascension. And so I wanted you to explain what the ascension is for people that may not be consciously aware of it. But I also want people to be consciously aware, if you're hearing about this, you're ready for this path.
Sure. Well, I heard about the I Am really, I mean, I think everyone's heard that expression at one time or another. It's in the Bible. It's in the Old Testament. Be still and know that I am God. And I didn't really take that too seriously. I was looking for something complicated. I spent a lot of time in India at the Theosophical Society, and I was sure you had to do something very, very complicated and go through severe trials and initiations in the Himalayas and, you know, stand on your head and do all kinds of mantras and...
and jump flaming hoops
before breakfast every morning.
Right,
exactly. And, you know, renounce all material things, be celibate, all of that stuff, you know? And then I was with Sai Baba for a number of months, and he did a lot of miracles, and he seemed to give me whatever I asked for. He gave some people magic pictures that did amazing things, you know, so I wanted one of those, and he gave me one of those, and then after a while the effect sort of wore off, you know. And then he gave me a mantra, and at first I would do the mantra and I would have amazing experiences, but then after a while that wore off, and the mantra just didn't seem to get me anywhere, you know, after a while. So just before I left, it occurred to me I had been telling him what I thought I needed. I hadn't really asked him, what do I need?
You know? Oh, that.
Yeah, right. So I wrote a note, and I waited there patiently, and usually he avoided me, but this time he came right up to me and took my note. Oh, and in the note I said, what should I meditate on, and where should I go? And the moment he took the note, someone came up to me from behind, which is sort of unusual because usually when he's out in public, people don't move around, you know. But the book they put in my hands was called The Impersonal Life. And I opened that up, and underlined on the one page that I opened to, it said, meditate on I am that I am. I think it said, meditate on I am God. It's not something you can tell someone else. They'll think you're an egomaniac, you know, but you meditate on it in the stillness in your own heart. I am the presence of the living God. And I said, well, I guess this is the answer to my question. So I began doing that, and that brought me back to the States and eventually back to Mount Shasta. Actually, it brought me to St. Germain in Muir Woods, and he's the one that sent me back to Mount Shasta. And I met this very sweet lady by the name of Pearl, who was an associate of Godfrey Ray King that wrote the I Am books, Unveiled Mysteries, The Magic Presence, and the I Am Discourses. And she said, she said, I've been waiting for you. And I said, well, what do you mean? You know, how did you know I was coming? And she said, the Master Saint Germain came to me this morning and said he was sending someone to see me. So she said, well, I work with the I Am. You know, so I said, well, Sai Baba told me meditate on the I Am, and I've been doing that, and he sent me here. So, and Saint Germain also sent me here. So then I started meditating on it really in earnest at that point. And I saw that that saying, I Am, is a translation also of some of the, it's sort of the battery that powers many of the Sanskrit mantras, but translated into English. And when you say, I Am, you invoke your own God consciousness at your point in space and time. It's sort of an affirmation of your own individual Godhead. And whatever you connect with those words is what you bring into being. You know, and so many people are looking for the source of their power from outside themselves or blaming their external reality for their condition. But really, we are the creators of everything that we experience. So when we accept responsibility for ourselves and we become the I Am, then we are the creators of our own world. So it's really quite simple, but there's the old story that humanity blew it the last time around, so this time the Master said, we're going to hide the secret, the last place that they're ever going to think to look for it, we're going to hide it inside themselves, in their own hearts. Anyway, you probably heard that.
No, I've never heard that before.
So, you know, we look to everyone else, you know, all the teachers.
Why doesn't somebody fix this?
Exactly. And I'm thinking in the West, we have so many choices that they sort of seduce us from the real purpose of our life, you know. You walk into a health food store and there are just walls covered with vitamins, you know, and the implication is there's at least some of these that you need, you know. Or, you know, you walk into a clothing store and you have so many choices what to buy, or computers, or, you know, everywhere you go, you're faced with infinite choices, and people make themselves sick over, should I do this, or should I buy that, or go here, or go there, and really, most of it is completely unnecessary. It's all right here within us. And no matter how much money we have or don't have, if we don't have the awareness of our own divine presence within us, we have nothing. You know, that's really the purpose of existence, is to find that. And I think that's, you know, one of the prerequisites definitely of mastery and ascension, is to know that divine presence within us.
Well, tell people what you mean by an ascended master, because not everyone,
right.
I feel, and I'm pretty certain that you feel that this is just, the earth is just simply a school for mastery and ascension. It's a graduating, jumping off place.
Absolutely. Well, there's a lot of sort of discussion about what mastery is and who masters are. Lots of people print, master on their flyers or their business cards, but that doesn't make them a master. I mean, you have the Masters Golf Tournament, but those people are masters of golf and, probably not. I mean, actually, some of them may be very spiritually evolved, but they're not claiming to be masters of other things. So, they're masters in all sorts of fields, but that doesn't make them spiritual masters. And, I met people in India that had ashrams and claimed to be masters, but then I saw they also had wild tempers, So there were still some areas that they hadn't mastered. So I would think that, to begin with, a master would be someone who is beyond being offended by anyone else. Just when I think I've got there, someone comes along and pushes my buttons, And the other day, I went through an area where they had been doing a Native American sweat.
Uh-huh.
And it was already over, and most people had left, but there was one person that was sitting there who was a friend of mine, and I went up, and I've seen so many of those movies from the time I was a child where there's sort of a stereotype Indian, And I went up, and I said, "How?" And I raised my hand, which I meant to be, it was all in good nature. I meant to give a blessing, because I raised my hand in the universal peace symbol. But there was someone there who was very offended by that, and he came down on me like a ton of bricks and really was angry. He said, "You have been very, very offensive," and just chewed me out, And I felt my blood rising, and I felt myself getting angry, and I just turned and walked away. But for the next couple of days, I had that to deal with. And then I saw this fellow about 2 days later, and I went up to him, and I said, I want to apologize for offending you, but I think we need to look at something. We both got pretty angry up there. And
you mean the second time you were talking to him?
I realized I was going to leave town, and I realized I can't leave town for a week. I can't leave town until I clear it with this person.
Mm-hmm.
And I realized what had happened had been a blessing to both of us, I had seen there was some area in me that could get angry still. And he had seen that there was some area in him, I had transgressed some, rule that he had that pushed his buttons, and his anger coming out of nowhere had pushed my buttons, So we both realized, we were both evolved enough to realize that this was actually a blessing.
Mm-hmm.
Now, most people want to lead a life that's sort of devoid of confrontations, or challenges. But those are the very things that make us into masters, And I think we sort of agreed to be here on this Earth schoolroom to have people push our buttons and to be in situations that cause us to look at those parts of ourselves, which if we were just totally comfortable, we'd never have to deal with. So I would say a master is someone that no longer has those buttons that can be pushed. I mean, they might need to manifest anger, like a mother shouting at a child that's in the street, They need to do that to get the child's attention. But I think a master would be someone who's beyond being insulted or hurt emotionally by events in their life.
That's a really tall order.
It is, definitely.
Looking at that, it's like, and then your kid comes along and does something.
Exactly.
And they're like, it's the most important that you do it right with your child, so.
Yes, oh, totally.
Wow.
Yeah, but we master these things sort of not by trying so much, by just saying, "Oh, I'm going to be a better person," or I'm beyond anger, but through meditation and meditating on that source, on the light in our heart, and the stillness within, through things like Vipassana meditation, where you sort sort of dissolve those tendencies to be reactive. And it's like lifting weights, really. You know, at first maybe you can only lift 5 pounds, and then you work up to, you know, 10 pounds and 50 pounds and so on. It's the same with meditation. At first maybe you can only do it, you can only still the mind for a minute, you know, and then after a while maybe you're up to 15 minutes where you can still yourself and experience your true sort of Buddha nature.
So mm-hmm. This is one of the prerequisites for ascension, is to meditate.
Yeah, well, maybe some people are born, you know, so they don't need to, but I think even very high beings that we embody still need to do that, to still the mind and to actually spend time on realizing their true nature.
Yes, and listening to what the true living divine mind has to say.
Exactly.
So I guess I wanted to say my experience or my vision of what being an ascended master is for me.
Oh, beautiful.
I actually don't want to leave the earth plane to be an ascended master.
Hooray.
I want to be totally rejuvenated, have my body be a perfect body, a perfect expression of God, ageless and timeless. And I also want to be able to come and go from it at will.
Mm-hmm.
I want to be able to bilocate.
Mm-hmm.
I want to be able to precipitate, levitate, operate outside of time and space. I want to have dinner parties like Saint Germain did, where the food appeared and then the dishes came back clean as a gift. Remember that for John and Pearl?
That's beautiful.
Yeah, where the dishes just reappeared clean
and
gift wrapped for the wedding. I want to do the things like that, and I feel that the Ascended Masters have come to show us that there is something besides death that is a choice for transformation.
Absolutely.
So I want you to talk about that.
Well, you hit the nail on the head. In fact, I was going to get to that. I was going to say...
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to...
Oh, no, I'm glad you brought it up. I was going to say, if you desire to ascend, you're almost not in the consciousness where you can do it. Because what happens, like Kuan Yin, as you start to leave the earth, or as you expand in consciousness, you feel the suffering of people around you.
That's not easy.
Yeah, and then your heart goes out, and you want to stay in hell, you know? And I had this experience, my first conscious contact with Saint Germain in Muir Woods, where he materialized out of thin air in front of me, just like you said you want to be able to do. I was in a physical body inside a redwood tree to get out of the rain, and I was just praying for someone to come to me and tell me why I should stay on the earth anymore. And because I had studied with people in India, the yogis that could leave their body consciously, and I was, you know, going to ask for permission to do that, and this being who looked just like a hiker wearing blue jeans and tennis shoes and a suede jacket materialized out of thin air in front of me, and he knew my name, and he said, "Peter, your prayer has been heard." And he touched me on the third eye and took me out of my body, and we went up to this higher realm, and there were beings there that were basically their I Am presence. They were spherical balls of light, like suns surrounded by rainbows.
Uh-huh.
And they were in a state of bliss. You know, they were just in a state of constant inner absorption or meditation. And I said, "This is it. This is where I want to be." And he was this being that had escorted me there, waited for a few minutes. And then I started to hear this crying coming from someplace, and it was sort of a wailing. It was just a horrible sound, and I looked to see where the sound was coming from, and then I saw the earth below me. this small blue ball down there.
Mm-hmm.
And my heart just went out, and I said, I want to go back and help people, because there was no way I could stand to know that that suffering was going on, and I had the power to somehow alleviate it. And he said, this is what the masters hear all the time, this suffering of humanity. And that's why they're here helping us, because we're all really linked together. We're all part of the one. And we all sort of want to go come engage ourselves and help that part of ourselves that's not yet enlightened. So that's when he told me to go to Mount Shasta, and then he said, I'll show you who I am. And he took a few steps back, and in front of me he turned into this being wearing a white robe, and then he just faded out and disappeared, you know. So that definitely got my attention. You know?
That would, yes.
And from that point on, all I wanted to do was to become what he was, you know. And so I was going to go on and say, you know, as we get to that point, we don't really want to leave. We want to stay here, but to develop our full potential as sons and daughters of God.
To really bring through the I am presence of the living God, unobstructed by anything of believing that we're human or limited by the human, you know, kind of Warner Brothers world we've made up together. Isn't that what you're saying?
Totally.
Yay. Yeah. Yay, God.
That's right.
I love talking this way, Peter.
Yeah,
I mean,
absolutely.
Amen, hallelujah, and yeehaw.
You know, and I was wanting to say also that more and more as we tend to draw boundaries to say, well, the ascended masters are up there and we're just humans down here, but we need to start using those powers which actually we have but don't realize that we have. And like as an example, I was in Dharamsala visiting the Dalai Lama last summer. I had taken my daughter there. And she became sick, and I needed to get her back to the States in a hurry. And we had to go through this ordeal of a 12-hour ride down out of the mountains, and the bridge was washed out, and the monsoons were sweeping through, and we had to drive along the edge of a cliff, and, you know, we had to get up at 4 in the morning to start the journey, and then we were going to try to make the plane in Delhi at a certain time, and it was quite trying ordeal. And I mean, I know that the masters are aware of me all the time. They're aware of everyone. But sometimes you want to call on somebody. I don't know. It wasn't even that I chose to call on someone, but I had sort of a experience halfway between sleep and waking, like, you know, 3 in the morning. I was sort of tossing and turning. And I found myself asking a friend of mine, saying, I really need help tomorrow. Would you be with me and pray for me? And this being said, yes. It was a friend of mine, you know.
And, an outer friend.
Yeah, and is someone who lives here in Mount Shasta,
mm-hmm.
You know, a three-dimensional being. And then I sort of forgot about it. And then suddenly, like the next day, in the middle of, you know, my daughter was sick, and we had to stop the car a number of times, and I thought we might need to turn back, and we had to drive through raging rivers and things like that, I kept seeing this lady's face in front of me, and I kept feeling energy coming from her. And it really sort of picked me up. I mean, for about 4 hours there, I kept feeling this energy coming from her, and it was a great source of encouragement and strength. And it sort of gave me, at the point where I thought we were going to have to turn around, it really gave me the strength to keep going. And I thought, how beautiful, you know, that is, that we can help each other like that. And then there's some people that sometimes call on me. They say they're going through something, and I say, well, I'm going to sit down and meditate. And they say later that they, you know, felt my assistance. Because whenever you put your attention on someone, one of your higher bodies is there. Like I'd say, like your higher mental body, one of your vehicles is there. And just by saying that person's name and saying a prayer for them, some energy is going out to them. And I think we need to do that more often. That's one of the ways we develop our own mastery, just by not accepting three-dimensional limitation, that we are multidimensional beings working in many planes simultaneously. Even if we're not aware of those other planes, just the aspiration and the intent to be of service to someone else is sufficient to actually bring about changes on the earth plane.
Well, in one of the discourses in your book, I Am the Open Door, it says a person who is calling on God has more strength than a whole army that is not calling on God.
Exactly.
Or more power. I forget exactly.
Yeah, well, Pearl used to say, one with God is a majority. You know, just one person can change the course of history. I mean, I had an experience many years ago when there was, there still is turmoil between Egypt and Israel and the Arab countries, but there was a time when it was really heating up, and it was on the news constantly, and I sent out a prayer to Saint Germain, and I said, please take command of the situation between Israel and Egypt. And I think that's when Sadat was in power and Golda Meir. And anyway, I said this one prayer to Saint Germain, and then the next day, during lunch, while I was making lunch, I turned on the news on the radio, and the commentator said, I would like to announce that the Prince of Romania has announced that he has taken complete command of the negotiations between Israel and Egypt.
Wow.
And, you know, there was a story that Saint Germain at one time was known as the Prince of Romania, that he used the name Count Rocazzi as one of his roles like a couple hundred years ago in the courts of Europe. And so when I heard Prince of Romania, I knew that was another name for Saint Germain. And it was, and the words the commentator used were almost the words from my prayer. I said, take complete command.
Yeah.
And I was so fascinated. I kept the radio on all day, and then that night I, you know, watched TV, and there was never another mention of it. They never mentioned Prince of Romania again. But, you know, I heard it, and then, you know, something developed in that situation where there was a situation of harmony that came about, and for many years there was peace. In fact, I don't think actually between Egypt and Israel there's ever been that same hostility again.
Wow.
So that just, you know, that was just one person making one prayer. What would happen if all the people, I mean, I see how my friends, I mean, I myself included, we get sidetracked by getting caught up in righteous indignation about what the government is doing, what's happening with the financial system, chemtrails, you know, the FDA, about all the conspiracies. And I'm not saying we shouldn't do something, you know, about it. I mean, I think it's important to work in whatever way you can and to call light into every situation. But if we start getting angry and it starts taking our light and taking us away from our own feeling of empowerment, then we're sort of missing the boat. You know, we start feeling like victims, and we start feeling like a victim. You can't be a victim and a master at the same time.
Right. Well, also, though, Peter, you might talk some about the violet consuming flame, because when I come in contact with those things, I find that it's not my business maybe to obsess over them like some people do, but it is my business to call the violet flame into them. And so I say, whatever existed here, when I become aware of it, it's replaced with an eternal, ever-expanding violet flame vortex that purifies it and nullifies it and neutralizes it and transforms it into something that's truly of service. And that is really my intention.
Well, it's the intent is the important thing. You know, some of the great books of Tibetan healing, you know, or Buddhist healing, say that the most important medicine of all is intent. You know, just your intent to be of service or your intent to purify something. And the violet flame is one of the great gifts of Saint Germain to humanity. It's something that masters have used throughout history, but has remained secret.
Uh-huh.
And it's because that quality of that violet light has the quality of purification and raising.
But do you think it's still supposed to be kept secret?
No. That's why they say Saint Germain went to, I forgot who it was, one of the cosmic masters who's in charge of our area of reality, and said, I would like to give this to people. And this master said to Saint Germain, if you're willing to accept that responsibility, I give you permission. So that was given to humanity back in the 30s, I guess. And I think that's the single most, or one of the most important things that people can do is call on that violet flame. And it's amazing how many people like yourself have felt that. I get phone calls from people saying, you know, it just came to me to use the violet flame, that's the greatest thing I can do. And, I mean, I need to be reminded of it more often. I know when I go to a movie and I'm sitting there and I have 5 minutes before it starts, I call on the violet flame. If you think of all of the weird movies that people have seen in there and all the thought forms of, you know, monsters and horrible stuff, and those emotions of fear and anger and all those other things are charged into the atmosphere there, and by using the violet flame, you dissolve those. And, you know, when I drive downtown, I use the violet flame through the center of town. It's just I used to say the words and I visualize it.
That's so wonderful. And it, also, I totally forgot what I was going to say. I have about 13 things that I want to ask you, and they're all sort of, kind of crashed in the middle and blew up.
Well, I just want to say one more thing about the violet flame. If, you know, if people experiment with it, then you get more faith in it, you know?
Yes, it will teach you of itself.
Exactly. So if you visualize your body, you know, just when you're sitting quietly, imagine that it's your body is this amethyst. Or it's like your body's a crystal and there's an amethyst in your heart with this dazzling light inside of it, illuminating every cell of your body. That's the greatest purification you can do. Then you know, on top of that, you might be receive the prompting to do some kind of a herbal cleanse or something, but the violet flame will work on the subtle levels, which release things on the outer levels. And if you're in a situation, like you're in a room and people are arguing and you call for the violet flame, visualize both people enveloped in this beautiful violet light, you can watch how that changes the situation. Or even, you know, you don't have to be physically present. You could just imagine that the Capitol or the Congress in Washington is enveloped in violet light, and you're doing tremendous good by doing that.
Yes.
Or someone who's sick that you know of, while you're talking to them on the phone, just visualize that their whole environment is surrounded in this violet light that starts beneath their feet and goes up all through them and up over their head, and that it's dissolving everything that's not perfect. You know.
Yeah. I know what I was going to say a while ago about movies is that it is, you know, when you're awake and you're working on illumination and having what truly serves on the planet, and are watching a movie or hearing something on the news, or hearing something that's for purposeful manipulation of people's power or something, I just say this thing, I command that I am the presence on guard, consuming instantly everything that seeks to disturb or limit. And when you say, I am a thing, you're calling on the God presence in all life, not just in yourself. But you're canceling that disturbance for anyone that'll come in contact with that. And that is the power that's available to people.
Absolutely. And the more you do those affirmations and you hold that kind of a view, that positive view, or that intent to be a source of purification for other people, the more charged your aura becomes. And then people just need to, like, be near you or even just think of you, and they get that help. Like, it goes out from you without your even being aware of it. You know, like that. Like Jesus said at one point, he said, somebody touched me. I felt the healing go out from me.
Yes.
You know, and someone just believed in him and touched his robe. And then there were other people, even just by thinking of the master, are healed, you know. But your aura becomes so charged by doing those affirmations, because you're reprogramming your mental circuits, you know, instead of getting all caught up in these sort of, you know, glitches that divert the energy into negative thinking. You become a pure channel for that positive consciousness to flow through and benefit others. You know, so, and I think you're the perfect example of it. You know, I just, when I think of you, I just think of somebody, I think I just feel goodness, you know, and you attract people to you that you're sort of like a magnet for that. It just sort of this positive energy flows out from you, and I think you bring good people to you.
I am definitely surrounded by, you know, years ago I said I wanted to do this, you know, become what Saint Germain and Jesus and Babaji have become on Earth, and be truly, truly helpful. And I think that's one of the prerequisites of ascension, is to make ourselves truly helpful, not in the way of someone who proselytizes or converts or any of those things, but just one who actually reminds people that they are the presence of the living God.
Absolutely. In fact, someone could not even know who the ascended masters are, and, you know, not wear violet shirts or, you know, or, you know, have crystals or meditate. And just by seeking to make themselves a source of blessing to other people, could ascend in that way. You know, so, and you also point out something that I like is what the Buddhists call basic goodness.
Uh-huh.
You know, that we all have that. Like a lot of the Christians like to dwell on what they call inherent badness. I don't know, that we're all born sinners. You know.
Yes.
And the Buddhists take the other view that we're all basically good. And you know, that thinking has really influenced the Western world, that we're all kind of sinners, you know. It's influenced people a lot. It's in psychology. It's in a lot of modern thought patterns, you know, that somehow we need to redeem ourselves. And really, that basic goodness is just there. It's like the sun shining beyond the clouds, you know, that once we dissolve those clouds, we realize our basic nature, which is perfection.
Well, and that's the purpose of the violet flame, is to burn away all the falseness of believing that we were sinners and imperfect and impure, and that God was not pleased with us. You know, my husband said a really wise thing one time. I said, I feel like I'm all, you're talking about this whole frame of reference of feeling like a sinner, and I felt like I was always making up for something I owed from the past, where I had let down God or let down some person or something, and working real hard at that. And my husband said one day, where does one end and the other part begin here? You know, when were you not making up for this? And the other thing is, he said, who are you being good for? And I said, God. What do you mean? And he said, when are you going to find out if he likes it?
Right. That's funny. You know, I was, that reminds me of, I was sitting with Neem Karoli Baba in India. That was Ram Dass's guru, you know?
Yes.
And I went to him to find, you know, just before I left India on one of my other trips, I said, you know, going to the guru, that's the thing you're supposed to do, and find out where you're supposed to go and what you're supposed to do. This is before I contacted Sai Baba. And he said, well, where do you want to go? And I said, well, should I go to this place? And he said, yes, go there. And I said, you mean not this other place that I'd heard he sent people? And he said, yes, yes, go there. And I said, well, you know, there's this third place that he sent people to. How about that place? And he said, sure, go there. And I said, well, which one is it? You've told me three places. I want to know, you know, where God...
I want to do this right.
I don't want to just wander around, you know. I want to go the place where God wants me to go. And finally, he got very exasperated with me, and he said, don't you understand God wants you to go where you want to go? Anyway.
Where your heart really desires.
Because that's how God is speaking to you, through your heart. You know, most of the time we get up in our head, you know, and we... Somebody tells us this, or we read that, you know. People used to go to see Pearl and say, you know, tell me what I want to do. And I mean, tell me what I'm supposed to do. And she'd say, well, what do you want to do? And they'd say, well, you mean, you know, what I would really do if all these other conditions didn't exist? And she'd say, yes. And then they'd say, well, I want to do this. And then she'd say, well, why don't you do it? And then they'd go out and tell people, Pearl told me to do this. But she never said that. She just said, she just put people in touch with their own hearts, what their real heart's desire was. And so just realize that there are no obstacles really to that heart's desire.
There are no obstacles to that heart's desire.
That's right. It's right there all the time. But you think you can't do it because of this or because of that, or you don't have the money, or someone told you this or that, so on, you know. But it's all right there just waiting to happen.
And in your opinion, all we need to do is say yes?
Well, we need to say yes and then be able to stay in that center as much as we can without getting distracted by all these things that, you know, we say yes or we do one affirmation, but then the next 10 thoughts that we have sort of cancel that affirmation out, you know?
Oh, like, what am I going to do when this doesn't happen?
Yeah, exactly. Or you affirm abundance, like in the morning you wake up and affirm abundance, and then you look at your checkbook and you go, oh boy, I'm broke. Well, you just negated, you did a negative affirmation, they canceled out the positive one, you know? So, you know, you need to, when you look at the checkbook, say, oh, I have the perfect amount of money for what I need, you know? This is God's checkbook. You know, God will put in my account whatever I need to do what I need to do.
Yes.
You know, and to hold that and not give in to the appearances, you know.
Yes.
So,
Well, Peter,
I just wanted to say one thing. Last night, it sort of comes back to this basic goodness that you've attracted such wonderful people to be on this program. And I was thinking of some of these people that I know, like Sharon Callahan,
yes.
Eric Berglund, Joanna Cherry, and then Marlise. And last night I was at Marlise's house, and she has this audio recording. I guess it's put out by Starseed Music. But
she's one of the recording artists and musicians.
Exactly. And
uh-huh.
She was singing this song, and all the words are, it's just I am.
Wow.
And it goes on for about 10 minutes, and she sings it so beautifully. I think the highest meditation that I've had, you know, in many months was last night, sitting in her living room.
Wow.
Listening to that. I wish I knew the name of the album.
Well,
they can get it at Starseed, I guess, starseed.com. Anyway, I just wanted to say that, you know, the simplicity and the fact that just by being who you are and wanting to be of service and holding to that basic goodness, you have attracted these kind of people that reinforce that and are also giving the same message.
Yes.
It is better to, they used to say, it's better to light one candle than to curse the darkness.
Well, Peter, we don't have that much time left, so I want to be sure that people see your website.
Oh.
It's such a beautiful website.
Thank you.
And also, you will get an experience of Marlies on your website.
Mm-hmm.
It's such...
Oh, that's right. I have a link to her from my website, which is basically, I think it's petermountshasta.com, PETERMTSHASTA.com. And there's some excerpts from my new book, Adventures of a Western Mystic, Apprentice to the Ascended Masters.
Say the title again.
Adventures of a Western Mystic, and the subtitle is Apprentice to the Masters.
Whoa.
Of course, when it's published, you know, the publisher may change the title somewhat, but that was like when I came here, when Saint Germain sent me here and I met Pearl, he said basically he can clear someone's karma in 3 years if they will give complete obedience to him. And I wasn't really aware of what I was letting myself in for, but you know, I said, I want to enroll in your program. And I know he heard me because things started happening right away, where I would just get this guidance to go someplace with no money, you know, and just go off on a journey that would maybe take me a month or two. And I'd be put through one trial after another where I had to just disregard the appearances that I didn't know where I was going, that I was threatened by dangerous obstacles, that I didn't have enough money, things like that. And just by trusting in the inner light and in the guidance that I felt in my heart, things always worked out. But for many years, my life was one test after another. So,
You know, you're one of those that checks and rechecks your work and then wants to be sure you got it and takes the test again, Peter.
Yeah, right, exactly.
and I'm saying that because I recognize it in myself, and it's scary to me.
Mm-hmm.
I guess I want to have more trust in myself than that.
Well, I guess you just have to keep proving it to yourself over and over, you know.
Until you really get that you get it.
Exactly. You know, like I guess when Marlies, you know, mentioned, we talked, said that she thought it would be a good idea if you interviewed me, and I said, well, I don't know that I really have that much to say, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I think I should go read some books or, some, you know, study some more and maybe, you know, make a lot of notes, you know, about what I want to say, you know. And then I ran into someone the other day, Diana Gaze. She's one of the people that lived here a long time, and she gives workshops around the world. And she said, you know, just by standing up in front of a group and just talking and saying reassuring things and, you know, just simple truths, you're being of tremendous service. And I remember I heard the Dalai Lama talk in Central Park a number of years ago. And what he said was, I mean, they were just the basic truths that we all know, but we need to keep hearing those things over and over, because we're just bombarded with the opposite all the time. You turn on the TV, you turn on the internet, you know, you look at the news, you're bombarded with things telling you the world is a terrible place. And just to hear someone stand up there who emanates goodness and say the traditional human values that, you know, you should be a good person, you should tell the truth, and, you know yourself and do good things for other people. It's so reassuring and reinforcing of your own, you know, divinity to hear those things, that it's a great service just to remind people of those simple things. And we don't need to, the truth is basically simple. We don't need to make it so complicated. So...
That feels like a real load off, doesn't it?
It does, definitely.
Yeah.
And I think just the intent to help people, like when you meet someone and they're having a problem, just the intent that they be relieved of that burden is already doing something for them.
Yes, and also sometimes people just need you to listen to them.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. that was a an experience I had with Sai Baba. It was what I call an inner interview, or an interview, I guess. But I took a group over to India to see him, and they all ended up having actual physical interviews except me, and I was the one that took them over. You know,
no,
I was feeling kind of miffed, you know, but actually, on the way over, we spent the night in Tokyo, and he gave me a dream interview. And in that interview, I was, for about 45 minutes, I was in his room. We were sitting at a table, just he and I alone, and I just poured my heart out to him and complained of all the things that have been bothering me my whole life, you know.
Yes.
And then he said, well, the time's really up. I have to go now. And I thought, wait a minute, I could have been asking him anything, and all I did was tell him my problems, but I felt so much better, and that was actually the greatest lesson he could have given me, because, right after that, I started getting into doing classical homeopathy, and a lot of that is just listening to people for hours, you know, and actually a lot of what I do during the day is listen to people, and how much better people feel just having someone to, you know, talk to.
You know, some people...
myself included, you know, I like to tell people what I'm feeling sometimes.
Yeah, and I remember Werner said this, that the reason people keep saying things over and over is because nobody will just get it.
Exactly.
And a lot, I've noticed this by just giving compliments and genuine appreciation of beauty with people, that a lot of people have never had anyone truly connect with them.
That's so beautiful.
And it's such a beautiful gift to give, to truly connect with someone.
Well, that's the mother quality, and that's what I think, I mean, a lot of people in general, but especially men, need to connect with. Mothers know that intuitively, that sometimes their child just needs to come up to them and be held, and they need to just pour out their heart, you know?
Yes.
And everybody needs that. And that's sometimes, you know, the greatest gift is to just listen to someone. And sometimes you need to tell them actually back what they've told you so they know you've heard them.
Yeah.
Like, wow, that must have really been hard, or you must have really gone through a lot of suffering with that, or just to let them know you heard it. And that's why people keep saying the same thing over and over, is because they don't feel you have heard them.
Or anybody's heard them.
Yeah, exactly. No one's heard them.
Well, I think it's a very great gift to just see a person's Christ self, too.
Yeah, that's it's interesting. A lot of these I Am teachings actually come from Tibetan Buddhism, that the masters took those ancient teachings and gave them and translated them and are releasing them in a much simplified form, because face it, most of us are not going to study Tibetan, you know, and there aren't many gurus around, you know, that are available anyway. They're all mostly traveling, you know, don't have time to teach us the way they did in the old days. So that teaching of seeing someone's Christ self, or their, whatever you want to call it, their I Am presence, or seeing Jesus above them, or Mary, or Tara, or, you know, whatever being you think of, just a ball of light above them, pouring light down into them, is one of the greatest things you can do.
Wow.
You know?
Well, Peter, you know, you were saying you were concerned you didn't have that much to say, but actually, I think you have incredible amounts of things to say, and we're almost out of time, so I wonder if you'd like to come back next week.
Well, that's very sweet of you. Sure, if you think we can think of stuff that people want to hear, if we haven't run out.
Well, you know, I want to hear this, and that's how I know people want to hear it.
Good.
Because I want to hear it. It uplifts and empowers and encourages and supports me.
May I say a little prayer that I say every morning at the end of my meditation?
Please.
It's about four or five lines. Throughout my many lives and until this moment, whatever virtue I have accomplished, including the merit generated by this practice and all that I will ever attain, this I offer for the welfare of sentient beings. May sickness, war, famine, and suffering be decreased for every being while their wisdom and compassion increase in this and in every future life. May I clearly perceive all experiences to be as insubstantial as the dream fabric of the night, and instantly awaken to perceive the pure wisdom display in the arising of every phenomenon. May I quickly attain enlightenment in order to work ceaselessly for the liberation of all sentient beings.
Wow. Thank you, Peter.
Thank you, Iris.
We have to go. We'll talk again next Monday at from 2 to 3.
Okay.
Thank you so much for being with us. And I thank people who have listened so much for listening. And if you've received something that's valuable to you, please pass it on to at least 10 people. And I am so grateful to be doing this, and to all of you that make this possible and all listening, I love you. God bless you, and may all your dreams come true.
Happy trails to you until we meet again. Happy trails to you. Keep shining until then. Happy trails to you till we meet again. I love you. And this is my wish for you, that all your dreams come true and are 1,000 times more wonderful than you ever dreamed possible. Amen, our women, our children, and you!